Hello. Hi, this is Michelle. Is anybody on the call?
He's all about
yes.
Here.
Yay. Hi, everybody. Hi, Nicole.
Hi.
Hi,
this is Chizoba. Hi. I'm going to take a couple of minutes to have everybody just say hi. I know everybody tends to talk at once and then everybody stops at once, but we'll get it. Verb, if you could just say your name and, you know, the basic general where you're calling from so we can start to put names with voices.
Then
hi, this is Chizoba speaking. I'm calling from Houston, Texas.
Hi, Chizoba. Hi, how you doing?
I'm good.
Good. Okay. So it's Chizoba from Texas. I just want to repeat it so that everybody can hear names as basics of where everybody's calling from. Chizoba?
Dan Mitchell, Dana Point.
Dan, is that right?
Yes.
Hi, Dan. Hi, how are you?
Good. I'm doing great.
Great. Good.
This is Casey Morgan, and I'm calling from Dallas, Texas.
Hi, Casey. Hi, how are you?
Doing well.
Great. Anybody
Hi,
else?
This is Masuma. This is Masuma Alam. I'm calling from Delaware.
Hi, I'm sorry. I missed your first name. What is that?
Masuma.
Suma?
Masuma, yeah.
Masuma. Hi. Hi. How are you? Did I get it right the third time?
I'm good, thanks.
Masuma?
Yes. Yes, you
okay,
did.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
It's a little a little feedback on the call. Oh, before we continue, if anybody has any sort of noise in the background, nobody's on mute at all. I don't know if you've ever been on, I know you've been on Barry's, but other conferences, sometimes all, you know, the people calling in are on mute and the presenter is the only one speaking. So if you have any kind of noise, even if it's on the call, you could just press your mute button, and then when you're ready to talk, just unmute yourself, and then it'll cut out on all the background noise. Sorry to add that. Anybody else on the call?
This is Sarah from Virginia.
Hi, Sarah. Hi, how are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good.
This is Jesse from Dallas. Sorry.
Oh, I heard, I think, three people and... Who can we?
This is Danny from
my name
Washington,
is Nicole
D.C.
Kimson from Dallas, Texas.
I got Danny, hi, and I got Nicole, Texas. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes, that's correct. It's Danny.
Hi.
From D.C.
Great. And
Chelsea from
like
California.
Chelsea, is that right?
Jesse.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. Anybody else? We've got all of the U.S. tonight, huh? I'm surprised.
Hi, everyone.
Well,
this is Mila from Toronto.
Hi. Oh, Toronto. Is this?
Yes.
I'm sorry?
Okay. Yes. Hi, Michelle. Hi, everyone. It's Mila from Toronto, Canada.
Sorry, you're... We're kind of clicking in and out. Can you say that one more time?
It's Ludmila from Toronto. Can you hear me?
Hi, I just heard you say, can you hear me, and that's all.
Okay, it's Ludmila.
Getula, is that right?
No, Ludmila.
Can you just spell it so I can try to...
Yeah, that's fine. L-U-D-M-I-L-A.
Ludmila.
Yes.
Oh, hi.
Hi. How are you, Michelle?
How are you?
I'm much better. Thank you.
Good, good. So welcome to my call, everybody. Was everybody able to make it to Barry's on Saturday?
Yes.
Yes, yes. Good, good. So,
I am sorry. You've got Mathieu on the line as well from New York.
Hi. I'm sorry. What is your name?
It's Mathieu. You can call me Matt.
Oh, Matt. Hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks.
Good. Welcome in. And again, nobody's on mute, so I want to add that as well. If you have any questions, if I talk too fast, Giselba knows me. If anybody else knows me or has heard me on the calls, I talk fast and I talk a lot. And I do that a lot on the boot camp calls too, because I really want you to get as much basic information as possible. Barry started this program up just within this last year, really. We've had different versions of it, but it was really to make sure that anybody that moves into, like, the other calls or the regular maintenance group calls, which I'll mention on the next call, that everybody sort of has the same basic knowledge of how DARE works, of how anxiety works. People join in, like, generic coaching calls where some people were really had already hit the ground running. They really get the insight. Other people read 4 pages of the book, and once in a while it's not working. So once you really get through boot camp, I really try and give everybody the same information, whether it's the first one-to-one call you ever do with me, the first group call you ever do with me. If I know somebody on the call is new, I try and give you as much of the stuff I want to make sure you know. And Barry has all of his information, too. And, of course, it all goes back to DARE. I know Suzanne really follows up and keeps everybody on the Facebook page. So we're all kind of working together. I know we have 3 different personalities, 3 different approaches, but it all goes back to really the same, you know, common lines that run through it. Just a little bit about me. I have been on, I've been with Barry since 2009, since he first started the coaching program. So he needed somebody really to run all the questions and the emails and things like that. So I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I live in New York. I have 3 kids and a husband and a dog. You will hear all about them if you speak to me long enough. I have a lot of analogies. People that have been on the calls a lot call them my Michelle-isms. You know, I try and speak very down to earth, use a lot of analogies to sort of make things seem simple to grasp. Because really it's all very it's not easy, but the whole process is simple. It feels very complicated. We tend to then overcomplicate it more, you know, through some of our personalities. But, you know, I try and keep it as simple as possible. But if you have any questions as we're going through and we're progressing, just jump in and let me know. Just, you know, jump right in and ask away. This call runs approximately an hour. I'll stay longer, as long as, you know, nobody minds, and nobody's ever seemed to mind that a call runs longer. but this way, if anybody really has any questions or concerns or doesn't get anything, I really just want to make sure everybody gets it. Because once you get it and you get how it works, all the work then is done, you know, in between the phone calls. So I love using the calls as, you know, in the beginning in boot camp where you get information. And then as you move forward, if you stick with, you know, regular group calls, all the work is done in between the calls, and the calls are more like a check-in. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yes.
Yes.
Hey, Michelle.
Yes.
So how does it work on my end? Like, my most challenge is at work. So this week that we're doing the boot camp, I got, you know, put in training somewhere else. You know, so I would have loved, like, if I would have been going to work where I have the challenge, you know, to do the boot camp. But at the training, I still manage to do what I can do, you know,
good.
Because sometimes I feel anxious, you know, there. Then I try to implement the DARE skills, and it really works. But I would have loved, like, if I had done the boot camp while at work, you know, because that's where I have the most challenge.
Yeah. Well, what's great is that you get to keep all of this information. You know, once you have all the audios and all of that, you still have access to it. I should mention, too, these calls are recorded only for people that are part of the boot camp call that can go back and listen to it. So I do want to make everybody aware of that. They're recorded. Not that, you know, we're broadcasting it on public television, but a lot of people find it helpful to go back and listen. And you'll still have access to this once it's finished. The Facebook page, usually stays open for about a week or two after the boot camp ends. So our real goal is to really kind of get you into the main group. You know, other boot camps before you, other programs before you. There's tons of people and lots of support all around the world, people from 8 years ago and people from 3 weeks ago. It's a really, really great place. But if we keep all the Facebook groups open, it's so segmented, you know, you'll never get to meet other people that you really, you know, probably should talk to. I do know a lot of people, like the boot camp is kind of like a real solidifying thing. It's kind of like when you right. Put your sorority or fraternity, right?
Right. Okay.
So most people do keep up their little private chats and things like that, but we'll move you into the larger group. And yeah, and then you'll still have that information. So you can always go back, listen to the recordings. Is everybody getting any technical problems? Is everybody getting Barry's text? And videos and reminders and things like that?
I am.
Good. Anybody not getting it? Anybody having any technical problems? Oh, good.
No.
Wonderful. That's what I like to hear. Excellent. Okay. So I know today is crutch day, right? Drop your crutch day. But I'm going to mention, I'm going obviously to talk about that, and then I'm going to open up the call for anybody to have questions and discuss. But there's just a couple of things I just want to mention first. So you might hear me ramble on for a little bit. It's all about anxiety, and if you're not here for anxiety, you're on the wrong phone call. So I just want to, you know, just a few things that, and I'm only mentioning some things, not because I know it's somebody in particular doesn't get it or needs to know it, but just over the years of running this program with Barry, it's I found certain people are always kind of getting stuck in the same sort of places or misconceptions about certain things. So there's always like just a few core things I want to clarify, and so that you get to hear all my Michelle-isms once, and then I don't have to bother you after this. So again, I think I'm sure what you all know, what you've all gotten already from this, is what your alarm really is, right? It's this fight or flight response. It's, you know, usually when you first start the program, most people are calling in to just finally get rid of this once and for all. I just want to get this under control, and I've done great, and I've made all this progress, but I'm kind of stuck at these last few things, and if I can just push through and take care of all these last few things and have it just be gone once and for all, that'll be great. But I think probably as you're seeing all in this short period of time, it doesn't actually work that way. It's no, even though it feels, I've been through it. I know, it does not feel good. It feels awful, right? You feel like you're dying or losing control or embarrassed or just fearful and then not knowing what you're fearful of. And suddenly, everything's scary. Everything's survival. Everything's exhausted, right? By the end of the day, you're fighting and like, you know, making plans around anxiety. And then by the end of the day, you are exhausted and can't wait to go to sleep. Unless you hate going to sleep. And then that's the next fight to fight until you wake up and you do it all over again. So to switch up the whole perception of this all, unfortunately, nobody ever teaches you this as a proactive approach. And I just came from my oldest daughter's back to school night, and they were talking about the things in science they were going to learn, and one was the digestive system. And you know, as you go through school, you learn about your circulatory system. You learn all the different systems in your body. But nobody teaches you about your alarm system. It's really what this is. We all have an alarm system built into us. It's that fight or flight response, right? So when thousands of years ago, we were sleeping out in the exposed wilderness, you wake up, lion, you don't have to analyze it. There's no, you know, pie charts or bar graphs or analyze, or you didn't Google what to do, and you didn't text your friend. It was fight or flee, or you got eaten by the lion, right? Or freeze, right? Fight, flight, or freeze. And all those things were designed as an immediate sort of thing. We didn't have to stop and think about it. Your brain, that part of your brain senses danger, potential danger, right? So boom, there's a whole bunch of energy. Here's a rush of energy just in case. Should you run? Should you fight? Should you flee? If you are still sort of fighting for your life, your alarm will continue to help keep you alive. The more you fight, the more your alarm thinks he's still in danger. So here's some more energy. So if, you know, if somebody's telling me they had that 24-hour panic attack, what probably really is happening is that, boom, there's that rush of energy. We turn around, we fight that rush of energy. Does that make sense? So our alarm doesn't know, it just, we're fighting something. It doesn't know we're fighting it. And that's how that cycle picks up so quickly. When we're no longer fighting danger, we're fighting the discomfort of our alarm. Is that clear? I know it sounds kind of like I talk out of both sides of my mouth sometimes, but
very clear. Very clear.
Oh good. And that starts to fire, really. So if you feel like you're in this dangerous situation, and that's a big word, and try and pay attention to how many times you'll hear it on this call, you'll think it, you say it in everyday life. Felt like I was dying. I just felt like I couldn't catch a breath. I felt like I was going to pass out. I felt like I was going crazy. I felt, feel. But it's, so we have somebody on the group call too, who always used to remind everybody on the call, but what are the facts, right? I felt like I was having a heart attack. Okay, so what are the facts? Am I having multiple heart attacks a day? No. Have I had a heart attack before? No. But I felt like I was. Well, no. And then, you know, he would tell, like, this guy was Philip. Well, no, Philip, you don't know that. What are you feeling? My heart is racing. Okay, my heart is racing. And when you bring it back to the facts, right, it kind of stops that fight of the fight. I'll get more into that later. But if you're fighting discomfort, your alarm care doesn't know what's on the other end of that fight. It just knows you're fighting something. So based on how you respond will determine how your alarm rings or doesn't ring the next time. So when you do nothing, you allow the alarm to turn itself off. So there's no off button for anybody to find. That's another thing that comes up. Like, all right, how do we get, all right, that's all great. Yeah, accept and allow. That's nice. Now how do I get rid of this? We can easily turn it, right? I'm sure everybody can figure out how to make it ring loud and clear. And then we think, okay, well, this is how I'm, now I need to make it stop. Oh, I accepted and allowed. I'm running towards, why am I still feeling discomfort? Why am I still feeling panicky? Why is my stomach still in knots? Well, it's not about the sensation. The anxiety is in the fight of the sensation. It's in the resistance, not in the discomfort. Say that 20 more times on this call. Anxiety is in the resistance, not the discomfort. It's in the fight of the discomfort. The discomfort in and of itself is neutral. The anxiety comes when we try and fight and control the discomfort. And to me, it almost always comes back to control. I obviously don't really know anybody on this call yet, but and I put myself in the same category. We tend to get similar personalities. And raise your hand if this a little bit maybe describes you. I get the most, from what I've seen in my experience, tend to be bright, smart, logical-minded people. You like to know the reasons why of things. And if you don't, you're going to figure it out so you can figure out how to, you know, not. Again, really good at making associations, the planners, the doers, the multitaskers, the type A-ers, black and white thinking, right? It's either I've done it perfectly or I messed it all up. You know, you have that endless to-do list, the all or nothing mentality, very creative minds, very sensitive as far as being very tuned in to your more aware of your thoughts, your situations, and your environment probably than other people might be. I don't know. Is that somewhat relevant to anybody on the call?
Total relevant.
Oh, okay. So
yep.
So you all are my survivors, and that's great. Excellent, excellent personality types for many, many things that have to do, you know, with anything in the world. You know, you are the make waves in this world. I have people that, many people that run major companies, people that have pulled themselves up out of difficult circumstances, people that have overcome so many things, and they get the most stuck because it's, I have beaten and fought and conquered so many things. I saved $10 billion last year, and I've grown businesses, and this is the one thing I can't beat. This is the one place I'm stuck. Plus, as I'm sure you've, again, have been learning, anxiety is not about the eliminating the discomfort. It's about releasing the fight of the discomfort. So back to, you know, our alarm being our protector, just a couple more things I wanted to touch on before we talk about crutches. Similar to our smoke detector, you know, I hope we all have one. If not, go get one. They're very helpful. They keep us alive, right? And when it rings, it doesn't play beautiful classical music. It doesn't sound like kittens purring, right? I don't know what yours sounds like, but mine goes, some are sirens. Some make noises. They all to make you jump into action. They're supposed to startle you out of bed. They're supposed to make you uncomfortable. They are supposed to make you jump into action without having to consciously do so, because that's what an alarm is for. And if it didn't do that, well, those companies went out of business and, you know, you kind of didn't make it out of your home. So it is designed to make you jump to action. What you do in response to that alarm going off, that's your decision. If your alarm goes off, now let's say you burnt cookies while you were, you know, baking dessert. Your alarm doesn't ring any differently, right? It rings the same way once it's been triggered. Something triggered it, smoke. It does not know the difference between your house burning down to the ground and, you know, burnt oatmeal raisin cookies. It just knows it's been triggered. So it rings, right? Now, you know that you just took dinner out of the oven. You took out a crispy black meatloaf. So you know that it rang because you burnt meatloaf, right? Your alarm doesn't know. But you don't need every time your alarm goes off. Does that make sense? It doesn't mean
yes.
You like how it sounds. It doesn't mean, oh, I know that it's a burnt meatloaf and it turns off. It just means my alarm rang, but it kind of misfired, and I don't actually need to do anything. Pumped full of energy for the next 10, 15, 20 minutes or so. But, you know, if I really just do nothing and my alarm senses zero resistance, when my alarm checks in to say, hey, everything okay? Oh, I guess so. He's not fighting. He's not fleeing. He's not controlling. Asking so that the alarm starts to turn itself off. We don't turn it off. Our power is when we stop fighting. When we stop fighting, we let our alarm reset itself. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, good, good. So that's why all the steps there are really designed not to make you feel more comfortable, but to build your strength to not have to fight discomfort anymore. That might take some time to sink in, maybe in the next couple of days. Keep that in mind. It's not about eliminating discomfort. So, you know, rather than, I'm still having intrusive thoughts. When we talk about those things, it's more like learning how to say, oh, well, so what? Who cares? You know, that's, you know, diffusing, allowing, oh, here you are. Here's all the things I don't like. Those are out of my control. My power is not fighting all of the discomfort. And I often refer to the gym, going to the gym for exercise, right? I don't actually go to the gym. I'm supposed to, but bear with me. It's a great analogy. You guys will all get it. So if anybody here exercises or goes to the gym, nobody goes.
I do.
Comfortable workout, right? Nobody goes expecting to feel good at the gym, or this is going to feel so comfortable. No, it's very uncomfortable, and that's almost why people go, because if it was comfortable, if you were lifting, you know, cotton balls, you're not really getting a good workout. So you have to go and really lift enough to feel something happening. Comfort is where change is taking place. So if I were to go to the gym, I mean, and if we were on a video chat, you see, I have scrawny little arms, and I'm not in good shape. I would have to start with 5. Okay, I'd have to start with 5-pound weights, and they would feel so heavy. They really would, because I'm not in shape at all. But if I went every day, and I went and I did it, it doesn't mean it's going to. I'm not going hoping it will feel better. I'm going with the idea of me getting stronger. So if I go continuously. Even then, you know, that night I might come home and look in the mirror and I look exactly the same. I might even feel worse. I feel worse. Oh, it's worse again, but I am getting stronger. I might not like how it feels, but my goal is down the line. It's in the future. My goal is not current, is not present comfort. My goal is for a future payoff, maybe to be healthier, maybe to lose a few pounds, you know, whatever it may be why people go to the gym. But let's say 2 weeks go by, and now I'm picking up these 5-pound weights, and they feel so light, right? They're easy. But when you really look at it, the 5 pounds is still 5 pounds. It's completely neutral. It felt heavy in the beginning because I was weak, right? I wasn't as strong. They feel lighter because I got stronger. Do you see the correlation?
Yes.
So all these things are there, especially the run towards. And you'll hear me really preach the R of run towards, because that's like not waiting for the gym to come to you and scrambling and, all right, oh, I got to do a workout now. You want to plan. Go to the gym. Go find ways to make yourself uncomfortable so you can practice letting go of the fight. Because when it comes to this, the strength that you build up is confidence. Confidence to say, I can feel all these things, but I don't have to do a damn thing about them. I don't even have to like how I feel, but my freedom, my ticket out of this, my ticket through this really, is that I don't need to fight it anymore. I don't need to survive every day. I can just let go. Whatever the hell my body wants to do, it can do. Go right ahead. If my, you know, mind wants to spin, go ahead and spin. My thoughts want to race, go ahead and race faster. If, you know, I'm having heart palpitations, well, go ahead. Let's see how fast I get it to race. Then I'm on to exercise tonight. And when you play with those steps, the D, the A, the R, and then you always re-engage back into whatever it is you're doing, you stop taking this meaning out of this alarm or this idea that there's danger. Because what we really get stuck in, we get stuck in fighting the idea of danger and the what ifs. Of a possible future danger when you're not actually in a present dangerous situation. So I know I just dumped a lot of information to you, but does this all make sense? Does anybody have questions about any of this before we move on to our crutches for today? Or am I totally face to, like, you know, anything? Do I sound bananas?
What? I have a question.
Okay, hi, sure.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi.
Oh, it's Jesse from California.
Hi, Jesse.
Hi. When you mentioned just now about getting stuck and fighting the what ifs of a possible danger, possible future danger, for me that it's that anxiety loop. It's the future danger for me is the like what if I keep going, you know, on this car ride or this train ride, and, you know, the anxiety loop continues where I'm thinking of what if I'm uncomfortable? What if I feel like I have to turn back? Shouldn't I just turn back now and spare myself the anguish? Like I went far enough. And so I'm kind of just, and I know it's important to stick with it, but I'm sort of just, sort of easy for me.
The moderator has left the conference.
Hello. Hi. This is Michelle. Can anybody hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, I hear you. Sorry. My whole call just dropped out. I don't know why. Sorry about that. Jesse, could you talk about what ifs about the future of anxiety never leaving? But then I got lost.
Yeah, yeah. I can finish real quick. But I guess that's kind of my biggest pitfall is getting stuck in that anxiety loop of what ifs, like just thinking to myself, if I'm out of my comfort zone and I'm feeling anxiety, I'm always in my head, I'm sort of thinking, what if the anxiety gets worse, even though I know there's no possible danger, and should I just bail now, or I know I'm supposed to keep going and not leave on my own terms. So I wondered if you had any advice on that.
Mhm. Yeah, sure. Now you're talking about a specific what if thought, but which most people do, normal, common. Situation may potentially be because it's trying to make sure you're okay. So for the most part, any what if probably about something that's similar that you fought before, right? So if it's what if it never goes away? So that's a spontaneous random thought. They will pop up all the time about all the
I don't know if it's just me, but I can't hear you properly, Michelle.
Hello? Oh, I'm sorry. Can
yes,
but,
I'm having
can
the same
now?
Problem here.
I'm having the same problem, and I actually just got kicked off the call and had to call back in, but it's also very breaking up a whole lot.
Okay, you know what? Let me call right back in again. I'll call right back. Maybe it's the connection. Sorry about this, everybody. All right, I'll be back in a minute.
The moderator has left the conference.
Hello. Hi, this is Michelle. Do I sound any better?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Sometimes, sometimes these calls, technology works great, sometimes not so great. So did anybody hear anything I said?
If you could repeat it, that'd be great.
Sure. Just let you know, you guys aren't so bad. I had a group that I somehow ended up on mute the first 20 minutes of the whole group call and gave this great talk and nobody heard me. So, we're actually doing okay today. But what if, okay? So you can have what if this, what if that? Again, you'll have what if, you probably have what if, there's what if positive thoughts, but fight against them. It's, what if I ask her for her number and she gives it to me, and what if this happens, and what if I get a raise? But they create that anxiety because we have those thoughts, right? We want those thoughts. So chances are the anxiety is caused by the fight of the what if thoughts we don't like, right? The what if scenarios of, and it's usually nothing wonderful, right? It's usually, something like you were saying, continued discomfort. What if it never goes away, which is super duper common. But again, anxiety is in the fight of the what if thought. It doesn't matter what the thought is. So it could be about work, it could be about kids, it could be violent thoughts, sexual thoughts. It's, if we're perseverating on it, we're making it very important. Am I super clear?
Yeah. It's great. Thanks.
Out anymore. So it's in how you respond to it. So again, the steps of DARE are applied to that too. And I know sometimes people think thoughts are different than sensations. It's the same thing. It's more like, what if I have cancer? Sensations mean there's something terribly wrong with me, and will find parts. I'm going to die. Oh, well, so what if it's, you know, a brain aneurysm? Oh, well, it's more like, oh, well, there's a thought I don't like. And again, we control and turn off our thoughts. I'm sure you know, the more you try and get rid of a thought you don't want, the more you find it. Because it's very easy to think up. It's your own brain. So it's all about, I try and encourage people to play with it a lot, humor where you can, to exaggerate the thought. It's not the thought. It's the fight of the thought. So you can have lots of other thoughts you don't like, but they might not necessarily create like that anxiety for you. It's because you might not like it, but you sort of shrug it off. And the more phone calls people come on, and you might hear other people like, oh, well, he has heart palpitations. Well, I get those too. Who cares? But these thoughts. Oh, these thoughts. If I could just get rid of these thoughts. And then heart palpitation guy says, well, I can't get those thoughts all the time, but my heart, now this could really be a problem. So it's really about what you fight. So if it's, what if this anxiety just never goes away? Steps of dare for that thought. You're fighting a thought of danger. You're fighting a thought of something that's not even happening. So it's, all right, well then I guess I better start getting comfortable with it. Oh, well, is this how uncomfortable I can get? What am I at, a 7 right now? All right, well, let's try and get to an 8. Let's see if I can get myself to an 8. Oh, but what if you're at an 8 for the rest of your life? All right, well, let's try to get to a 10. And then maybe if I get to a 10, I stay at a 10 the rest of my life, maybe Michelle and Barry will give me a free call. That's what I'm going for right now. And if you can kind of play with it a little bit, show, basically, you don't have to like it, but you show your alarm that there is no danger. Oh, that's a crap thought. Just like, what if I walked outside and got hit by a car? Yeah, there's another thought I don't like. Okay. That's another thought I don't like. Against it in order to control, a future bad thing from happening. Anxiety loves the past and it loves the future. It's having you go back to the past of things that have happened before and projects it off into the future. Anybody on agreement here? Like, you're always going back and forth, looking back to things that have happened and, you know, what if-ing the situations into the future. You want to keep bringing yourself back to the present. All right, well, if it's here the rest of my life, it's here the rest of my life. I have no idea. I can only deal with what's happening right now. What's happening right now? My alarm is ringing? Great. Thanks, alarm. Thanks, buddy. Thanks for looking out for me. Say, but Jesse, what about that? But Jesse, what about this? Like a little kid pulling on your shirt, right? Oh, but look at this. But look at this. You don't have to grab it and you know, evacuate every time it thinks there's potential danger. You get to say, hey, you can ring the whole time we're here. There's no danger, right? So when you switch it to, what if this monster never, ever leaves me? It's more like, you know, what if my alarm is always pointing out potentially dangerous situations? Your response to that could be, all right, well, great. I'll be on high alert, and I'll be the first one out, you know, should an emergency happen. But go right ahead and ring. I'm watching a baseball game. Go right ahead and ring. I'm having dinner. And you're switching relationship with it. Does that make sense?
That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. That was spectacular.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you found it helpful. So it takes time, not because it's so hard and complicated and you need to know all this psychobabble stuff. It just takes time because, you know, it takes time to switch your perception of it's this terrible thing that needs to go away. I have a disease. I have a problem. I have I have this chronic condition. No, you don't. Your brain's doing exactly what you've told it to do, really, if you think about it. Not on purpose, but your alarm senses danger, it's just going to jump in and help you out. It's there to keep you alive. So all you need to do is say, thanks. Go ahead and ring if you want. You know, just like a child having a temper tantrum. Well, go ahead and scream all you want. You can't control the temper tantrum, but the child learns based on, you know, how you respond to them. To himself. Doesn't make the temper tantrum any more enjoyable, but you don't have to control it all. You don't have to manage this system of your body. more on high alert than other people, let's just say. You might be a little more tuned into your thoughts, tuned into your body, tuned into the environment than others. I don't know if anybody on this call might agree with that, where you might notice thoughts and things in your emotions, every little twinge, every little sensation, you know, changes in air pressure and the weather, easily affected by things. It's like a hypersensitivity towards things. It's almost like a superpower, if you look at it that way, you know? Like really good, like strong, empathetic, you know, like tuned into other people's feelings. I get that a lot. Animals, children, things like that. It's great. It's a great thing when you let go and stop feeling like you have to fight the negative parts of it. When you let go, the whole world is now on, right? So you get to feel all the good stuff too. But that's kind of now when you're busy like surviving and fighting for your life. But you'll see the flip side of it. A lot of people have a hard time seeing that whole, you know, anxiety is not just a curse, it's a blessing sort of thing, but stick with it. You'll see. It's not this monster that needs to be gotten rid of. It's just learning how to not have to fight, not have to resist and control things that maybe many of us are so accustomed to fixing, controlling, beating, conquering, doing, logically analyzing, finding the right way of doing things, and we also like time. That's another thing. Just let go and do nothing. And when your alarm is done, it will turn itself off. We want time. We want it now. We want it fixed. And if we didn't do it right, and if it's not gone, we must not have done it right, so we're going to do something else. So again, just if you could all even leave this call with this goal of not looking for comfort, right? This is gym time. You're in the gym to get uncomfortable so that you can get stronger. So then for the times that you are uncomfortable, you don't really care as much about it. And that's where the crutches really come in. And crutches, I mean, crutches are a great thing. Crutches are designed to kind of bridge you from one level of care to another. You know, I mean, I've worked in inpatient hospitals and medical hospitals before, and, you know, there's a rehab units and outpatient therapy and actual literal crutches for when you break your leg are designed to help you until you're able to, you know, right, put weight on your foot until you've healed, and then you start kind of weaning off the crutch. And it's a great part of recovery. So crutches, when it comes to this in a sense, are great ways of getting out and exposing yourself to things that maybe you weren't letting yourself do before, right? Like, I'll go to church, but I'm going to sit on that end part of the pew. And if somebody wants to come in, I'm not moving in. I'm getting out and they're going to move in. Or, you know, like that dusty old Xanax in the bottom of your pocket. Or I'm going to sit by the window or by the door because that's safe. But if I don't, it's a freaking disaster. You know, like we create this all or nothing, black or white scenarios. And we basically live our lives around anxiety. And sometimes it's so subtle, right? Like sometimes it's, okay, just hang on real tight until, you know, until that's over and we'll let go, or just count to 10 and try and calm down, or think of a happy thought. When it, to me, sometimes people have a hard time picking up their crutches. And if you do, just try and notice when your anxiety goes up, what certain things do you do to try to feel better? And if you're trying to feel better and turn it off, that might be something to play around with a little bit. So anybody have anything? I'd love to hear from you, your crutches, your goals for today, your progress so far from the beginning, your thoughts, your feedback, you know, anything. I'd love to open up the call to everybody. We do have time. I can't believe we usually talk half the time. I'd love to first, really, to sometimes I'll get people on these calls, but this seems like the end of the day for most.
Hello. So I guess I'll talk a little bit.
My name is Masuma, and I think my crutches mostly are...
The moderator has left the conference.
Hello? Hello?
Hello, yeah. Hi.
I apologize. I don't know what keeps happening. My phone keeps clicking out, but so I'm sorry. Does anybody want to share their goals? Their goal for today, which was dropping your crutch?
Yeah, I'll share. So for me, my crutches are my phone and my Xanax bag. My purse I usually carry always everywhere with me. And even how you're describing, like, sitting by the door or sitting somewhere where I can't escape. So even, you're right, like, I do that at times and I don't even realize I'm doing certain things like that. But today I did go on a walk around my block, like, around the building. I left my phone, I left my Xanax, and I started walking and I was feeling fine. But the further away I got from home, I could feel my anxious feelings coming up, and I just kept telling myself, you know, diffuse it. So I was like, so what? And I was like, just allow and accept. So even though my heart start racing a bit, and then, you know, it does pass quickly when you just sort of allow it. And I just kept walking and walking, and then, you know, I did it and it was fine. And it was difficult, and it wasn't far, or it wasn't that much, you know, because I knew home is only like, you know, 5-10 minute walk home. But still, it was, I think for me, that was a success, just even leaving my phone behind. So I think that was good.
Yeah. Anybody else have a phone as a crutch? No, I'm surprised. Phone's a big one. Yeah, because you could phone for help, and what if, right? The crutch is always a tie.
And I also have the this is Sarah. I do, and I also have, I think somebody else mentioned it on Facebook, I have the rapid release audios on my phone, which are kind of a crutch. Not, I haven't used them too often, but I like knowing they're there.
Yeah, that's a crutch, right? Like, as long as I had somebody come on, I've had a 0.25 milligram pill of Xanax from 2008. Just sitting in my pocket, and I take it everywhere I go. And as long as I have it in my pocket, I don't need it. You know, and it's all these, like, false senses of security that we put in our head. And as I mean, as, who was just talking about leaving their phone and their Xanax behind?
Me, Masuma.
Hi. So, hi. Yeah, I mean, just so now think of what's really happening. Your alarm is like, okay, well, She's leaving her home. So now she's going from some place that we're considering a comfort zone to some place that's not the comfort zone. This is less safe. Out, like, basically from how you are, basically the messages you're sending it is, this place is a little less safe than this place, right? But as long as I bring these few things with me, it's almost like Minecraft, right? As long as I have these couple of tools and this weapon with me, then I'm safe. But if I don't have it, uh-oh, right? And then there's the resistance. There's the fight. There's the, okay, hurry up. Hurry up and go and get back. Or the, oh, you know what? I left my thing at home. I need to get home now. And basically, right, all your alarm says is, uh-oh, this could potentially be dangerous, because she's made sure to set all these things up ahead of time before she went to this place. So just like you said, you got to a point when you felt, and the further away you got from your house, right, the further it was away from what you've decided was your comfort zone. Like, this at home is safe. As long as I can get back to home base is okay. I don't need, you know, I don't need to worry about getting all my stuff set up at home. When I go away, what if? What if I have a panic attack? And then it takes me 10 minutes to get home, right? And then I'm already on full-blown panic mode. And then I have to run home, or I get embarrassed and people see me. I mean, you know, you've heard it all. It's all very common. So exactly. So I would go out again tomorrow. But remember, you're not going out, and this is just for everybody on the call, not going out with the mindset of, okay, if I go 5 minutes today, 10 minutes tomorrow, 15 minutes the next day, it's going to be the straight linear path, and each time I go out a further distance, I'm going to get more and more and more comfortable until I'm comfortable everywhere and I can just take on the world and everything feels great. So it's switched up. It's more about I'm going to go for five you know, steps away from my house because I know that's going to – whatever I can do, whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to do to make my alarm ring. I'm going to go and try to make it ring because all of my practice is letting go of the resistance. There's a whole lot of resistance when my alarm's ringing. So when it rings, when my alarm starts saying, oh, my gosh, do something, that's my huge opportunity to say, you know what, it's just burnt cookies. And I can even go 10 more steps. But I need it. You need it to really sense danger so that you can show it with your response. It's not dangerous. And by the message you sent, it's not about not having it ever go off and not having it ever ring. It's about when it rings, the message you send it back. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. And that's sort of a comforting thought. Even when I got this video to leave your crutch behind, I was like, oh, then it's okay. Like, I'm safe. Like, it was a weird thing. Like, in my mind, I was like, yeah, of course. But that confidence that somebody else has in you to be like, you're going to be fine even if you leave these things behind, it sort of like gave me confidence as well to do it. It's kind of a strange thing, I think.
Yeah, good. It's amazing the power of our brain. You know, when we decide something's okay, something's okay. You know, and I have some people that as soon as I take my Xanax, I'm like, it's still in your throat. It's still, you're still swallowing it. And they're like, oh, I feel so much better now. Everything's fine. Because and you're only feeling fine because you've decided I'm safe now, so you've let go of the fight. It's, oh, good. Your alarm set, so you kind of had the power all along. I always think of Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz, you know, when at the end, you know, she's like, you've had the power all along, and you have, right? Because we really turn it off, turn it on and turn it off ourselves. We don't directly turn it off. We stop fighting, and as a byproduct of us stop fighting, the alarm senses, there's no more fight, so there's no more danger. We're going to wind down this energy right now. We're going to hold off on that. We're going to cut off that adrenaline flow for now until we sense danger again. And if we sense danger again, ta-da-da-da, here we are to help her through it. And that's really all it is. And the more simple you keep it, you tell yourself, because it gets we make it very complicated, right? The storms that go on in our brains. People had any idea, right? As they're looking at you in a meeting and you're hanging on for dear life, you know, you might look fine, but that's that hurricane in your head, right? It's something. But when you just let go of the, it feels this, but I feel this, and oh my God, what if I pass out? And what if this? And what if it doesn't go away? And what if it gets worse? And oh my gosh, I forgot my Xanax. And oh, I'm 10 miles from home, and I'm stuck in the car with people. And what if I freak? It's not about those situations. It's about your perception of it being dangerous. And your alarm is just helping you get through what it's perceived danger. It's not actual danger. So it's letting go of these perceived dangerous situations. It's never about turning your alarm off because it'll always be there. It's the same alarm that when you step into traffic and somebody beeps their horn, you jump back. So we need it. It's built into us, right? We're the products of all of our ancestors who have fought and have fled, right? So we need it to survive. But there's much less danger now, in a sense, right? We're not like fighting, surviving for our lives so much, you know? We're also not good with patience anymore. We don't really have to wait for too much anymore, right? So if they didn't get your text, you're obviously going to message them on Facebook, right? And, you know, if they didn't write back in 3 seconds, you're going to, you know, send out all these follow-up messages and all these other different ways to connect. We're not good at just doing nothing. And really, this whole program boils down to just do nothing. Nothing to do. Your alarm rang. Oh, well, so what? Who cares? 3 taglines, I would say, really try to work into your own internal dialogue. Oh, well, well, my alarm's ringing. Oh, well, just like my digestive system is working. Just like, oh, well, I blinked. I sneezed 3 times yesterday. All right, well, so what? Can't control it. It's just my body being my body. Just my body picking up on signals it's getting. There's nothing else for me to do. Just do nothing, and my body will regulate itself. Just is another big word to add in there. Just. It's just anxiety. Not, oh, my gosh, I'm having a panic attack. It's, oh, well, it's just my alarm system. Just thinks there's danger. Sorry, more burnt cookies, more burnt meatloaf, you know, whatever it is you guys like to burn in the oven. It's all right. It'll still ring, but there's no actual emergency. Another word I would throw in there is be aware of the I can't and I should have or I shouldn't. When we talk on the calls, I call it shooting all over yourself. Stop shooting all over yourself. It's got all these high expectations, and we tend to get personalities that have very high expectations of ourselves. We're our own worst critics, much kinder towards others than we are to ourselves, very, our own harshest critics, and you know, hold ourselves to this ridiculous level of how we think we should be, and I should have gotten this by now, and I shouldn't have done that, and I should have gone to the store, but I didn't. Drop all that. Just start being aware of how you're talking to yourself. Celebrate every little step, because when it comes to this, the little steps are the huge ones. I don't care if you flew to the moon. Like, that's nice. That's kind of cool. But if you haven't left your house in 5 years and you took 2 steps out your front door, that is huge when it comes to this. Because what you're doing is telling your alarm, wow, for 5 years, you thought outside was like the zombie apocalypse. And I just said, yeah, I hear you. Thanks, alarm. And you stepped outside anyway. That takes guts. So to me, the first few steps you take are really hard because it's going against what your alarm is saying, right? But it's dangerous. And as your confidence grows, it'll come a little more naturally. But in the beginning, it's, I know you're telling me it's dangerous, and I don't like how I feel, but I'm going to do it anyway. And when I do it, I'm going to throw myself a party every time. Every time I put these techniques in place, good for me. And if my goal was to go 50 feet and I went 25 feet, good for me for going 25 feet. Good for me for having the guts to do it. And tomorrow, okay, so not tomorrow, my goal will be 30 feet. And then it'll be 40 feet. And then until you get to the point that you realize, it doesn't matter how many feet I go. I could go 12,000 feet or I could go 1 foot. But the point of me going is to not increase my distance comfortably, is to put myself somewhere where I will feel highly uncomfortable so I can learn not to fight the discomfort. And that's a big point of dropping the crutches, so that you can feel discomfort. A lot of us have those crutches to feel better. So when you drop the crutch, just like when you let go of a regular crutch when you're doing physical therapy, you will feel uncomfortable because you haven't used those muscles in a while. You haven't used these confidence muscles in a while if you're using, the crutches to help you feel okay until you start realizing, I don't have to feel okay. I don't have to feel okay to actually be okay. So I'm going to go out and allow myself to feel uncomfortable, and I will probably still feel fear too. I can't turn off fear, and I can't make myself like something. I can hate it all. I can dislike these sensations and these thoughts all I want, but I don't need to fight against them. They're not dangerous. So anybody else went out and dropped a crutch today or had questions about dropping crutches?
I have a question about crutches.
Sure.
It's Jesse again. In the DARE book, I know Barry talks about having water sort of if you feel that anxiety getting super high, and water's kind of my crutch. But I wonder if it's even really considered a crutch, or if it's just sort of something that's okay with having around. Like, you know, if I'll take it with me if I'm going on a long drive just to stay hydrated. But, mm-hmm. If I'm doing something short, like, if I'm going for a walk or something, I'll leave it at home. But I just kind of wondered what the consensus amongst the sort of people running the program were about water as a crutch, if it sort of qualifies or not.
It's anything could be a crutch, really. You know, if it's, I can have somebody come on and say, I won't drink water in front of people because what if I choke? I once, you know, it went down the wrong way when I was drinking water and I totally embarrassed myself and I can't do that. And other people might say, I have to have it with me. And if I don't have water in me, I freak out because, you know, what if I feel nauseous and I think I'm going to throw up or I start freaking out and the water calms me down. So it's not necessarily about what it is. Water in and of itself, for the most part, most of us are not drinking enough. Stay hydrated. Keep drinking. You know, take the supplement. Take the magnesium. Do your exercise. But when you're doing it for your overall well-being, keep doing it, right? Meditating is another big thing. When people first start there, it's I've heard a lot of people, they have a hard time with meditations because they're so focused on their breathing. They're so focused on their thoughts now. And if they haven't learned that whole little shift where it's just about allowing whatever there is, they have a harder time. But when it's for your overall well-being, well, yeah, I'm going for a long drive. I'm going to take some water. Yeah, I'm also going to take a snack. And, you know, I'm going to wear something comfortable or whatever you do for your drive. But if it's, I have to take this because of anxiety, because if I don't, it'll be a disaster. You know, if it's like that, if you want to go out and challenge yourself, if you say, you know what, you know, I've never done that drive without water. Oh, because what if like I get like a really tight throat and I can't catch a good breath and I just, that's a great challenge because you're fighting a what if. Do you see the difference? It sounds so subtle, but the more you really kind of, you know, are aware of not just what you're doing but why you're doing it, you'll be able to see, am I really using this as a crutch? Like mm-hmm. we were saying before, oh, so I didn't realize I sit right by the door just so I can, you know, exit stage right when I start feeling uncomfortable, I can get the heck out of there. So a good challenge would be, you know what, I'm going to purposely plop myself right down in the middle of that room, knowing that I'm putting myself there, knowing that my alarm will probably ring so that I can respond safe. If I really had to get, if there was actual danger, I would get out of that classroom. I would get out of that meeting. I'll get out, but there's no danger right now. But thanks, alarm. You can keep ringing. There's still no danger.
Got it. I see. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, just carrying water with you to stay hydrated. But when you feel that anxiety peaking, sort of when you would instinctively reach for it to calm you down, to not reach for it or just wait for the anxiety to extinguish and then maybe hydrate yourself.
Yeah, right. I mean, again, and it's not, I don't want anybody to get stuck with the right way of doing it, the wrong way of doing it, because that's who I tend to get on the call. Like, well, which meditation? I did this meditation at 10:38 a.m., and I had like an off afternoon, so tomorrow I'm going to try and do it at 10:13 a.m., and you're trying to get like the right thing. You'll see, it becomes much more of a natural sort of, like, just learning how to just shrug things off, just how to say, oh, like how to respond to those what ifs in a different way. Like if your thing is what ifs, go and try and seek out those thoughts. All right, well, if that happens, it happens. All right, let's go try and panic all day then. Oh, but what if I have anxiety forever? All right, well, let's try and keep it around today. It's one of those things, it's like an optical illusion, you know, when you say try and follow the blue dot, you know, on the screen, and every time you look at it, it disappears. But when you're not looking for it, it pops up. It's kind of this whole thing. It's learning how to make peace with this part of you, and it's a very counterintuitive, and it's a big, giant paradox. That's why it gets people stuck. It's, well, I don't like it. And we're human beings. We seek pleasure, and we avoid pain. So if we don't like it, we're going to try and feel better, because that works with mm-hmm. most other things. But when it comes to this, it's not about, anxiety is not in the, you know, the comfort. It's in the fight of the discomfort. We are just very good fighters.
I gotcha. That actually makes a lot more sense of just shrugging it off. And if I'm like leaving my house and I'm like, oh, I forgot to bring water. Oh, well.
Right. Like, what if you forgot your sunglasses? Like, you would make do, right? Or, all right, well, mm-hmm. if I need water, I'll pull off to the gas station and get water. But if it was a real crutch for somebody, I had a water bottle on me all the damn time. I always carry water with me now just for the sake of carrying water. But it was, oh, my God, I got to go. I got to get my water. Stop, turn around, go back, get water. It became an emergency, right? Until suddenly, like, again, not having water is dangerous, right? When it's not, it's just, I'm just thirsty, right? But what if, but what if, but what if, but what if? Again, so that you start picking up how the words you're saying, and now all of your power is how you respond to it. So it'll be, your alarm's on high alert, expect it to keep ringing, but set up all these goals for yourself with that mindset that, of course it's going to ring. It should. I kind of programmed it to, but now I'm going to practice. It's all in the response to it. It's not, my goal is not having it not ring. My work is done in how I respond to that alarm. So how about the program overall so far? Anybody have any questions? Anybody hate it? Anybody love it? Anybody confused? Anything in particular? Any comments? Any questions? I'd be happy to answer anything.
Hi, sorry. So I personally struggle a lot with depersonalization and derealization on reality kind of feelings. And those are the toughest, like, even with my physical symptoms, I can kind of logic with myself and tell myself they're logical, you know, it's just my sympathetic system. But with those actual feelings of, like, you know, these weird feelings of disconnect, disoriented, like, those are harder for me to diffuse because I'm like, this is actually what I'm experiencing, what I'm feeling. And, like, I know you talked about earlier what I was feeling, but, you know, those are harder for me to diffuse. So if you have any thoughts on that, that would be helpful.
Sure. Anybody else dealing with that? That depersonalization, that kind of disconnected, unreality feeling? I could have 100 people on the call and they all describe it differently. And then they usually start with, you know, it's hard to explain, but it's kind of like, like almost separated from your own brain.
Yeah, I
Anybody
do for
else?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like with anything, again, depersonalization is just another sensation that you probably just happen to not like the most, right? That's like your top offender. So it's like, oh, those sensations, the other sensations, yeah, okay, I can diffuse and allow. But this thing, I don't like this one the most. This one's the worst one. So if you've decided that that one was the one you don't like the most, that's the one you want to spend the most time with. That's the machine at the gym that you can only lift 2 pounds on. So that's the machine you need to spend more time on, right? You know, I ever see those bodybuilders, they're like top heavy, they're really, really big, and they got those little string bean legs. So you need a leg day on the depersonalization machine. So it's seeking out that weird, trippy, strange feeling, and when you get it, to run towards it. One of my go-to things is if you're having a hard time passively just allowing and accepting, if you're able to shrug certain things off and, okay, accept and allow that, that's the ultimate goal, really. That's great. But when I get people, it's usually, but these are the things I'm really stuck on. Well, then that just means you're not accepting and allowing right now. Accepting is more of a passive thing. It's a shrug. It's, oh, whatever, it's there. Some things take a little bit more practice, but for the most part, it's more of a passive almost, right? Like, all right, well, there it is. Oh, well, no big deal. But if you're saying that, if you're trying really hard to accept and allow, then you're not accepting and allowing, right? It's, yes, yes, I accept. You know, you look fine, honey. No, I accept. I don't care what you wear. Oh, we're not going out in public like that. Like, it's usually conditional acceptance, like, oh, yeah, I'll accept you as long as you're gone in 10 minutes. So derealization, whatever it may be. So, for example, yours is derealization. If you're having a hard time passively accepting, actively run towards it. Nobody likes R. But that's the part that really pushes everybody forward the quickest and the best and builds that confidence. Go try. Your number one goal tomorrow is to get as disconnected from your brain as you possibly can. And when it's reached a peak of an 8, push it to a 9, and then push it to a 10. What's the most exaggerated thing that can happen? Let's say your soul separates from your body and you float away and you turn around and you see yourself and you wave goodbye and then come over to New York and see me. So when you exaggerated, almost like a cartoon sort of way, silly. Again, it's not the sensation, it's the fight of the sensation. On one of the calls, I was talking to some, we were talking about derealization, and I had a woman who was like same thing, kind of stuck with that particular sensation. I said, you know, people do things to try and have that sensation. That's why people do drugs, certain drugs, you know, have you have that disconnect, out of control, disconnected from my body sort of feeling. And she was very proper, calm, spoken woman. She goes, why the hell would somebody do that? She said, because they're not fighting that sensation. They like that, you know, you like that feeling. So as we were talking on the call, you know, we were talking about how to kind of go towards that. So one of the guys on the call said, hey, you know, you just, again, making it funny and kind of not fighting the idea of it, but, and he would say, you know, and then in that sense, you know, you look at it as like a free high. Hey, I don't even need to do anything. It's not illegal. I don't have to, you know, I'm not going to get in trouble for it. I don't have to spend a dime. This is great. I'm going to ride this as long as I can. Almost sort of making a joke of it. Does that make sense? So you're not, you don't have to like the sensation, but your anxiety is not in the dislike of the sensation. It's in the fight of that sensation that you don't like. So once you get it, you try and dive into it and say, all right, you know what? Instead of me hanging on real tight and like surviving till it's over or trying to calm down to make it go away, which is just subtle resistance, dive into it. All right, here we go. Take me away. Take me somewhere. And when it starts to wind down, oh, that's it? That's all you got? Oh, come on, let's go. It's only like 30 seconds. Let's go at least another 3 more minutes. Let's see how disconnected I can get. And that's just derealization. But you can take any particular, sensation that you're fighting against and basically replay that whole scenario with that sensation or with that thought. So what do you think? Is that something you think you could do or you could try tomorrow or tonight or right now? I don't know if you're having the sensation.
I could try it. Definitely scary, but you're right. You're right. I like that humor that you said, just leave your body and go visit you in New York. Like, I think I should add some humor to it. That would be funny.
Yeah, if you can. You know, I'm trying, again, when I talk this way, I don't want anybody to think I'm, like, downplaying or belittling how anybody's feeling. But that's how you want to start talking to yourself, because if your alarm's like, oh, shit, what about this? And your response is, oh, shit, you're right, what about this? Let's get out of here. Everything's suddenly dangerous, right? The whole world is dangerous. Now you second guess yourself. It's, I don't know if I should do this. You know, I'm going to take this route to work instead of this route, because even though it's taking me 20 more minutes, it's not the highway, and I don't want my alarm to ring. It's all about not poking the monster, right? But once you realize it's not a monster, it can go ring all at once. I can take the highway if I want to. But what if I have a panic attack? So I have a panic attack. All right. But what if? Well, there's an idea I don't like. Oh, there's another idea that kind of sucks, but that's not happening right now. So, oh, my heart is racing, or, oh, I'm feeling this. What are the facts? Oh, my hands are trembling. All right. Well, I wonder if I can get them to tremble more. See, they're all, it's just a new way of responding to these automatic responses. We had somebody on a call years ago. He said, now that I got this, he goes, I don't even call it a panic attack anymore. I don't even use those words. Nothing's attacking me. He says, it's not even like my vocabulary. I call it an overreaction to an adrenaline rush. Because that's all it is. I'm not in danger. I'm not being attacked. So it's just the words in and of themselves sound scary and dangerous, you know? But I'm just, you know, my body's releasing chemicals and I'm overreacting to it like everything's a dangerous situation and it's not. So the more you really change that whole dialogue, the more you'll start building your confidence and changing your response to things. When you stop living your life around anxiety and working around it because, oh, just in case, I better take that phone just in case my alarm starts to ring. Well, who cares if your alarm starts to ring? If it rings, okay, look around. Is the building you're in burning down? No. Okay, well then it's a false danger. So let it ring. Whatever. Thanks for checking in. There's no actual danger here, but thanks. you can keep ringing. I'm going back to work. See, those are kind of, in a subtle, quick way, those four steps of DARE kind of rolled into a little one kind of, switch in your mindset.
Thank you. That was really helpful.
Oh, you're welcome. And post going. So if that's your big thing, this is the 10 days to do it. Why not? You're in you've got the most support, people from all around the world. You got all of us. You've got the Facebook pages. This is a great way to start changing. It's not about the derealization. It never was. Everybody experiences the same things on different levels. We're all humans. We all basically experience the same things. It's just what we're fighting against that's ringing our alarms. So anybody else have anything they wanted to share or questions or, anything else that they'd like me to explain or clarify or comments before we finish up?
This is Nicole from Dallas, and I had a question about I feel like I'm hopefully on the end of it, but the one thing that I seem to get stuck on is just the last thought about, if I have this thought, it won't go away for the rest of the day, and I kind of get hooked on that. Is the approach kind of what you just explained to her with the derealization, just kind of inviting it and being like, okay, well, come on then, let's think about it all day long. Is that kind of the same?
Yep, absolutely.
Same.
Right? See, I told you you weren't alone. Everybody's got that thought, right? What if the thought go away? Okay, you don't have to think about it. It's okay. Don't think about it. You're working. Think of something else. And then 3 seconds later, you check in to see if the thought's gone. You find the thought. You're like, oh, my gosh. And then one. Is that kind of how it tends to work throughout the day?
You're kind of breaking up. I heard probably half of it, but I'll probably just say yes. I think I got enough to understand the question. So, yes, that's pretty
Sorry.
Much how it works.
So, basically, it's like, oh, gosh, there's that thought again. Oh, don't think about it. Just go back to work. Just don't even think about it. And then, 10 seconds later, you check in to see if it's there, see if it's gone. It's obviously there because it's your brain, and you can go find any thought if you want, and it's there, and it's, oh, gosh, there it is again. Oh, gosh, what if it doesn't go away? And we just perseverate. And just think about it. If you've got your eye out for it, it's up on the radar of your alarm. Mom's like, this is dangerous because she is fighting against this. Doesn't know if it's, a serial killer or if it's a thought you don't like. It just knows you're fighting against something. So it's, all right, well, there's a thought. All right, I just want to sit and think about this thought all day long. And some people, it ends up becoming almost funny because they're like, no, we're supposed to be thinking about this. Let's think about this and make this thought as big and exaggerated as possible all day long. And pretty soon, when you're not fighting it so much, you're just thinking it, it becomes boring and it doesn't become, your alarm's not sensing danger because you're purposely going there. So eventually, you'll get bored with that thought and your mind will start drifting away to work or to your family or to getting out of the shower or whatever it is you're doing. It's, no, come on, let's get that thought back. Where's that thought? Come on, I want to make that thought even worse. I want to make that thought more exaggerated until it just becomes so boring. It's not the thought, it's the fight of the thought. Can you hear me or am I still breaking up?
Yes. No, thank you. Yes, that makes complete sense. Thank you.
Okay, good. I mentioned Stephen King on the calls. I said, I don't know him personally. He's never been on the calls. But if he were to ever experience anxiety, I would bet money that it wouldn't be on these dark, intrusive thoughts, because the thoughts that some people come on and that's their anxiety trigger, to him, that's his inspiration. There's my next 1,200-page novel about some, scary, dark, twisted idea. So you and I might get a thought like that, and it's scary, and we fight against it because we don't like it. For somebody like him, it's, yes. Oh, and then what can happen, and how can I make that worse? And if that scares me, it'll probably scare other people. And, he turns it into a novel. You and I, we don't have to like it, but when we fight it, we've told our alarm that this is dangerous. When it's not, we just don't like it. So keep that in mind as, you know, thoughts pop up, as sensations pop up. You never have to like them. Nobody's ever fighting the comfortable things. I still have not ever had anybody come on and it's like, oh, I just feel like people are hugging me all day, or, you know, there's like, you know, unicorns licking my feet, and it's never anything nice. Like, angels are massaging me. It's always like, I feel like I'm dying. I feel like I'm going crazy. I'm going to be like this forever. I'm going to be embarrassed. I'm going to have a heart attack. I'm going to pass out. It's always about something negative. And it makes sense, because it's not about the something negative. It's about the fight of the idea of something negative. And when there's nothing to actually fight, it's that paper tiger, your alarm, you know, it gears towards the next best thing. Well, there's no actual danger, but she doesn't like how this feels, so she's fighting that discomfort. That discomfort must be dangerous. And there's that association. Oh, I'm lightheaded. It's just like my house burning down. No, you're just lightheaded. But what if I pass out? Well, now you're fighting another thought. That's another thought. You're not passing out. You're not having multiple heart attacks. You know, what's happening right now? I'm having thoughts I don't like, and I'm fighting against them. Does this make sense? Does everybody see how this works?
Yes.
Sure. I just want to make sure I'm not making anything more confusing. I'm clarifying more for you. I just wanted to make, you know, and you know, I will talk less on the next call, and I really want to make sure everybody gets on and chats and talks. And our next call will be on Monday, the 18th, and that will be our last boot camp call. So dive in, participate as much as you can, kind of like, you know, go get your money's worth. Pull us on Facebook, participate on the calls, make sure you join the calls, go back and listen to the calls, and really important, go out and practice. Listen to the, you know, the text message that comes through in the morning that links to the video, and then go out and do your challenge. Do it multiple times a day. Post pictures of yourself doing it. Write it down in a journal. Praise yourself to high heavens. Listen to it at night. It's all about forming habits, and that's going to be how on our wrap-up, how to keep these good habits going into the future. All right. So unless anybody has any other questions or comments, we'll finish up for tonight. And our next call will be Monday with me. On my next call and our last call will be on Monday the 18th at 8:30 p.m. But you'll get updates and calls about updates and messages about when the next calls are, the next call with Barry, and then the next call with me. Okay? And
thank
if anybody
so
needs
much
to reach me directly, I forgot to mention, I wouldn't message me on Facebook. I have different Facebook accounts, and there's a gazillion Facebook pages with there. I can be emailed at michellecavanaughcoaching@gmail.com. Suzanne and I also do one-to-one sessions if anybody really wants to speak one-to-one. I recommend finishing out the program at least first. Get through boot camp. I promise I'm not going to tell you anything different on a one-to-one call that I would tell you in the group. But just those are just other services that we offer, and I'll explain to you about the Dare Advance calls and everything else on our next call, because, you know, we're not just going to give you all this great support and information and then say goodbye and leave you. We also have other levels of support if you'd like to continue on with us. All right, but for now, keep doing the daily goals, and I will speak to everybody on Monday.
Thank you so
okay?
much.
Thank you.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Michelle.
You're welcome. All right, good night,
Thank
everybody.
You.
Take care.
Night.
You too.
Bye.
Thank you.
The moderator has left the conference.